In the modern laboratory in the basement of the Clinica Santa Maria, word was received that Dr. Gutierrez had identified the animal that had bitten the American child as a harmless basilisk lizard. Immediately, the analysis of the saliva was halted, even though a preliminary fractionation showed several extremely high molecular weight proteins of unknown biological activity. But the night technician was busy, and he placed the saliva samples on the holding shelf of the refrigerator. The next morning, the day clerk checked the holding shelf against the names of discharged patients. Seeing that Bowman Christina L. was scheduled for discharge that morning, the clerk threw out the saliva samples. At the last moment, he noticed that one sample had the red tag, which meant that it was to be forwarded to the university lab in San Jose. He retrieved the test tube from the wastebasket and sent it on its way.
"Go on. Say thank you to Dr. Cruz,"
Ellen Bowman said, and pushed Tina forward.
"Thank you, Dr. Cruz," Tina said. "I feel much better now."
She reached up and shook the doctor's hand. Then she said,
"You have a different shirt."
For a moment, Dr. Cruz looked perplexed. Then he smiled.
"That's right, Tina. When I work all night at the hospital, in the morning I change my shirt."
"But not your tie?"
"No, just my shirt."
Ellen Bowman said,
"Mike told you she's observant."
"She certainly is."
Dr. Cruz smiled and shook the little girl's hand gravely.
"Enjoy the rest of your holiday in Costa Rica, Tina."
"I will."
The Bowman family had started to leave when Dr. Cruz said,
"Oh, Tina, do you remember the lizard that bit you?"
"Uh-huh."
"You remember its feet?"
"Uh-huh."
"Did it have any toes?"
"Yes."
"How many toes did it have?"
3,
she said.
"How do you know that?"
"Because I looked," she said. "Anyway, all the birds on the beach made marks in the sand with 3 toes like this."
She held up her hand, middle 3 fingers spread wide.
"And the lizard made those kind of marks in the sand, too."
"The lizard made marks like a bird?"
"Uh-huh," Tina said. "He walked like a bird, too. He jerked his head like this, up and down."
She took a few steps, bobbing her head. After the Bowmans had departed, Dr. Cruz decided to report this conversation to Gutierrez at the biological station.
"I must admit the girl's story is puzzling," Gutierrez said. "I've been doing some checking myself. I am no longer certain she was bitten by a basilisk. Not certain at all."
"Then what could it be?"
"Well," Gutierrez said, "let's not speculate prematurely. By the way, have you heard of any other lizard bites at the hospital?"
"No.
Why?"
"Let me know, my friend, if you do."
The beach. Marty Gutierrez sat on the beach and watched the afternoon sun fall lower in the sky until it sparkled harshly on the water of the bay, and its rays reached beneath the palm trees to where he sat among the mangroves on the beach of Cabo Blanco. As best he could determine, he was sitting near the spot where the American girl had been 2 days before. Although it was true enough, as he had told the Bowmans, that lizard bites were common, Gutierrez had never heard of a basilisk lizard biting anyone, and he had certainly never heard of anyone being hospitalized for a lizard bite. Then, too, the bite radius on Tina's arm appeared slightly too large for a basilisk. When he got back to the Carrara station, he had checked the small research library there, but found no reference to basilisk lizard bites. Next, he checked International Biosciences Services, a computer database in America, but he found no references to basilisk bites or hospitalization for lizard bites. He then called the medical officer in Amaloya, who confirmed that a 9-day-old infant sleeping in its crib had been bitten on the foot by an animal the grandmother, the only person actually to see it, claimed was a lizard. Subsequently, the foot had become swollen, and the infant had nearly died. The grandmother described the lizard as green with brown stripes. It had bitten the child several times before the woman frightened it away.
"Strange," Gutierrez had said.
"No, like all the others,"
the medical officer replied, adding that he had heard of other biting incidents. A child in Vasquez, the next village up the coast, had been bitten while sleeping,
and another in Puerto Sortrero. All these incidents had occurred in the last 2 months. All had involved sleeping children and infants. Such a new and distinctive pattern led Gutierrez to suspect the presence of a previously unknown species of lizard. This was particularly likely to happen in Costa Rica. Only 75 miles wide at its narrowest point, the country was smaller than the state of Maine. Yet within its limited space, Costa Rica had a remarkable diversity of biological habitats. Sea coasts on both the Atlantic and the Pacific, 4 separate mountain ranges, including 12,000-foot peaks and active volcanoes, rainforests, cloud forests, temperate zones, swampy marshes, and arid deserts. Such ecological diversity sustained an astonishing diversity of plant and animal life. Costa Rica had 3 times as many species of birds as all of North America, more than 1,000 species of orchids, more than 5,000 species of insects. New species were being discovered all the time at a pace that had increased in recent years for a sad reason. Costa Rica was becoming deforested, and as jungle species lost their habitats, they moved to other areas, and sometimes changed behavior as well. So a new species was perfectly possible, but along with the excitement of a new species was the worrisome possibility of new diseases. Lizards carried viral diseases, including several that could be transmitted to man. The most serious was central saurian encephalitis, or CSE, which caused a form of sleeping sickness in human beings and horses. Gutierrez felt it was important to find this new lizard, if only to test it for disease. Sitting on the beach, he watched the sun drop lower and sighed. Perhaps Tina Bowman had seen a new animal, and perhaps not. Certainly Gutierrez had not. Earlier that morning, he had taken the air pistol, loaded the clip with ligamine darts, and set out for the beach with high hopes. But the day was wasted. Soon he would have to begin the drive back up the hill from the beach. He did not want to drive that road in darkness. Gutierrez got to his feet and started back up the beach. Farther along, he saw the dark shape of a howler monkey ambling along the edge of the mangrove swamp. Gutierrez moved away, stepping out toward the water. If there was one howler, there would probably be others in the trees overhead, and howlers tended to urinate on intruders. But this particular howler monkey seemed to be alone, and walking slowly and pausing frequently to sit on its haunches. The monkey had something in its mouth. As Gutierrez came closer, he saw it was eating a lizard. The tail and the hind legs drooped from the monkey's jaws. Even from a distance, Gutierrez could see the brown stripes against the green. Gutierrez dropped to the ground and aimed the pistol. The howler monkey, accustomed to living in a protected reserve, stared curiously. He did not run away, even when the first dart whined harmlessly past him. When the second dart struck deep in the thigh, the howler shrieked in anger and surprise, dropping the remains of its meal as it fled into the jungle. Gutierrez got to his feet and walked forward. He wasn't worried about the monkey. The tranquilizer dose was too small to give it anything but a few minutes of dizziness. Already he was thinking of what to do with his new find. Gutierrez himself would write the preliminary report, but the remains would have to be sent back to the United States for final, positive identification, of course. To whom should he send it? The acknowledged expert was Edward H. Simpson, emeritus professor of zoology at Columbia University in New York. An elegant older man with swept-back white hair, Simpson was the world's leading authority on lizard taxonomy. Probably, Marty thought, he would send his lizard to Dr. Simpson.